initially, several months ago, Rabbi Karap asked me to give a shir klali during the Aseres Yimei Shuvah. I told him that I would be willing to give such a shir, but I preferred to give a shir in Inyanei Ag. Initially, several months ago, Rabbi Karap asked me to give a shir klali during the Aseres Yimei Shuvah. I told him that I would be willing to give such a shir, but I preferred to give a shir in Inyanei Agadotah, that is, Inyanim that will create his orders that's so appropriate for Aseres Yimei Shuvah. We know, of course, that the Rambam tells us that the blowing of the shofar on Rosh Hashanah is to arouse us from our slumbers, and on Yom Kippur we're actually supposed to be doing the tshuva. It's clear that during Aseres Yimei Tshuva we have to be working on the tshuva process to reach the darga on Yom Kippur where we are actually really involved in doing tshuva. So that would be most appropriate, and that was my original intention. I think that most of you know that this past Shabbos morning, Shabbos Shuvah, Rav Yeruchim Gerelik, who was a Rosh Yeshiva here for approximately 40 years, was nifter after a very trying and long illness. And for me, a Talmud of his, from the very first day he came here, it became Yemei Avelus. And the fact that I had an opportunity to speak to the Bnei Yeshiva meant that I was going to be able to express Divrei Hesped in place of Divrei Hisorus. Fortuitously, as it turns out, Harav Gerelik, my Rebbe, was such a towering personality, a towering Torah personality, that Divrei Hesped on him will in effect be the opening up of a live, vibrant, Sefer Torah. And as Rabbi Yehuda says in Shari Tshuva, one of the means to be misoyer oneself to Tshuva is through learning Sifrei Kodesh, Kal Vachomer, if we look into the life of this unique Torah personality, will we be able to gain the Hisorus that is so appropriate for the Aseres Yimei Tshuva before Yom Kippur? It's almost 40 years to the day that Rav Gerelik came to this yeshiva. As it turned out, I was in his first class. Before he had been employed, I was put in a higher class. And when he was employed, Dr. Belkin decided that a group of us who had been placed in the higher class should be put down into his class. Yeshiva Bochrim, being what they were and what they are, resisted, and we put up a very strong fight. The administration was insistent. There was no other way, except, of course, to leave the yeshiva. So we finally, grudgingly, reticently, went into the classroom. But we weren't making any major concessions. My group of friends, and we were in those days considered to be the Masmidim. I don't know if it can quite compare with the Masmidim of today, but for that day and age, we were considered to be the Masmidim. So we decided to sit in the back of the room. Obviously, the message was, he better prove himself, because otherwise we're going to walk right out. The gorilla came in. I'm not going to go into physical descriptions of him, but everyone has, I think, if you were in Rav Khalap's office, Rav Khalap, you have the picture of Rav Gorelick 40 years ago. If you ever have occasion to be in Rav Khalap's office, just take a look. You'll get an image, and it's a very faithful picturing of him. He surveyed the scene with a sparkling, fierce eyes. He sat down and started giving the shiur. The front of the class was fairly empty. Didn't bother him. He started raising some interesting questions. He injected some of his, what shall I say, famous, infamous humor, and we started to chuckle and laugh, and we were also intrigued by the questions and issues in the Gemara that he had raised. By the way, I just realized, 40 years ago, we started Maseches Kiddushin, as we are starting right after Yom Kippur. The significance of that, I'm not sure of. Maybe it's another Galgal, a new Zohar, by Boyin Shana. But he asked some very pertinent questions, and I had the feeling after a day or two that he was getting to us. He had made his mark. Within a week or two, we were all crowded around his desk. You know, in the spirit of Shaser, B'Tama, Dvorah, around, and for the 2 years that I was in his class, and I don't think I ever cut. In fact, I think I even attended his shiurim during exam period. And to have the opportunity to be in his class was a super treat, and the privilege, of course, that very few people have had in their lifetime. What did he do for us? He gave us a geschmack. Geschmack, what's a geschmack? Shall we say a sweet taste for learning. The clarity, the insight, the sharpness, the incisive manner of presentation just gripped us. We had never heard anything like this before. And I remember that as a result, I started really becoming a master. I actually learned at night a little then. I remember going up to the old library on the second floor, sitting there, learning Kiddushin. There was one ritva in the entire yeshiva. And I was using that one ritva that had been published some 80 years before. But he had gotten to us. First with respect to learning, and then in another extremely important area. He gradually started changing our value system. I was into baseball and everything else. I was quite an expert on statistics and what have you, and other areas of general conduct that would not be considered totally appropriate for yeshiva bachur. I didn't say yisurim, but not totally appropriate. And he proceeded to, in his very classical and famous Musar Shmurzen, veritably raised the roof, and he really shook us to our foundations. Gradually, he moved us, he nudged us, he cajoled us, he tricked us, he got us moving. And this he did for many in my class, and for the subsequent classes and generations that he taught for the next 40 years. And might I say, that though I cannot say that a majority of his Talmidim were converts of his, everybody felt his mark. The impress that he made was indelible on everyone who had gone through his classes. Who was this man? Who was he? The truth of the matter is, I have to ask, who was he with respect to many other areas of endeavor? Who was this man who infused emunah, Yerushalayim, yes, even a fear of Gehenna in his Talmidim, in his shul, to his Balabatim, and to the many people he met in all walks of life? In fact, the major thrust of his shmuisim and his brushes were directed to inyani emuna and Yerushalayim. I always remember regularly attending his Shabbos Haggadah brushes and Shabbos Shuvah brushes that he held in his shul in the Bronx. This was, for me and many others, an event. And certainly in the earlier years in the Bronx, standing room only. So I noticed, drasha after drasha, year after year, on Shabbos Shuvah and Shabbos Haggadah, he spoke about emunah. He spoke about clash between Paro and Moshe. It always revolved around emunah. So I remember asking him once, Rebbe, after all, most our shanim either deliver a tilpul b'halachit concerning Pesach or concerning Yom Kippur or Sukkot. And if they don't do that, they at least talk over the halachis, discuss the halachas that are pertinent, either for Pesach or for Sukkot and Yom Kippur. Why do you keep almost reflexively repeating the same topic? So he told me, Avada Kiyumah Mitzvahs are very important. The problem is, who talks about emunah? It's as if it were something that we took for granted, but as a matter of fact, very few people are really thinking about emunah in terms of Ikrei Hadas, in terms of what the Ribbono Shel Olam means to us, in terms of Schar V'Einish, and once again, that Gehenom. Nobody likes to talk about Gehenom. We talk about Yira Eloi. Oh, you know, the fear of Gehenna, that's low stuff. That's not crucial. What do you mean that's not crucial? That's first. The Yiras HaGehenim has to be there. And then you work your way up to higher forms of Yira. People don't talk about it. It's almost like unspoken. Who talks about Yiras Shamayim? So Mamash, he felt it a chayv kodesh on his part to make sure that Ikrei Amunah were emphasized in his brushes, because in fact they come first and they are the foundation to everything. So who was this man who had, especially in his early years, this spellbinding capacity to attract and almost totally absorb his audience in the themes that he developed and communicated? Again, I must ask, who was this man who was able to present Torah both in his classroom and to his balabatim, and wherever he gave a shiur, where he would present lundus in an exquisite, simple fashion, in chumash? His pshatim were elegant, sharp, incisive, with rayin, with thought, and above all, with great depth. He was, in fact, a master teacher. And he familiarized us. I was only 15 then. He familiarized us with what are now, of course, household names in America. Reb Chaim, Reb Baruch Ber, the Brisker Rav, and others. They became alive, and he was the vehicle that communicated the vibrance of their Torah to these upstart 15-year-olds. I remember his telling me once, as we were walking one Shabbos evening up Mount Eden Avenue. Mount Eden Avenue happens to, I hope, still be a street in the Bronx. And I, especially back then, I would visit him quite often. And we were talking about communicating lundus and its importance. And I remember his telling me, you have to remember, the Ktzais brought down Torah min HaShemayim. And if he brought down Torah min HaShemayim, we have to be able to continue that tradition and communicate that Torah min HaShemayim to the Bachrim and to the Olam. Because if we don't get that Torah min HaShemayim through to the Bnei Torah, we are lost. Who was this man? Again, I must ask. Who was this man who was able to view society at large? Many of us are sadly familiar with the fact that many Rosh Yeshivas, especially those who've come over from Europe, have, unfortunately, certain limited horizons and visions about the world at large, having had very little experience with it and basically being cut off from it. Somehow, he had the uncanny ability of being able to starkly depict the bankruptcy of society outside. And of course, some of us would laugh, some of us would smirk, some of us would shake our head. But his ideas were amply proven 20 years later and are just about undisputed today. I remember how he would talk to us about advertising in America. How does one advertise? There's a car. Beautiful car. Very appealing. And then there's a beautiful girl right next to it. We started laughing immediately. Here, she from Europe, Talmud of Briskerel, talking about beautiful car and a beautiful girl right next to it. And we started rolling around, chuckling. We could contain ourselves. But he continued on and explained to us the psychology of advertising. Maybe we're more mature today and we're more understanding of this, but we were then 15-year-olds, and he got through to us the decadence of the society, and on and on and on, with an insight, with a scope, and with a vision of the world outside that he gradually weaned us away, not only us, but his balabatim, and with whomever he spoke. Who was this man? Again, I must ask, who was this man who came up to the yeshiva, moved into the Bronx, settled there with his family, and proceeded to build two yeshivos katanos, Yeshiva Zichron Moshe for boys and the Beis Yaakov Beis Miriam for girls? They were superb yeshivos. And he founded these yeshivas, he nurtured them, he was involved in the day-to-day chinuch problems of these yeshivos, and to this day, people are always amazed at the fact that this great Talmud Chacham, or even that great Gaon, or that fine Ben Torah, came from guess where? From the Bronx, from a place where in Brooklyn they would speak of it as Medina Sayyam. As a matter of fact, those yeshivas that he ran very tightly and very closely were, in a certain sense, yeshivos for Balei Tshuva, because very often only parts of the classes had children who came from homes that were Shomrei Torah and Mitzvahs. But all the teachers were Talmidei Chachamim, they were Yirei Hashem, they were all dedicated, the principals were dedicated, and those yeshivos were able to make their indelible mark also on generations of Talmidim. As a matter of fact, my own children, all of them, attended either the Zichron Moshe yeshiva or the Beis Yaakov, and they were all the better for it. And of course, he continued on. He had always had a dream in the Bronx that it would go beyond merely being a yeshiva k'tana. And an effort was made, but by the time that he tried to develop a mesifta, the Bronx already was beginning to turn and disappear. So then he started a yeshiva gola up in the Catskills, which today is considered to be one of the outstanding, reputable yeshivas in America. All by dint of his effort, his energies, not only in the areas of chinuch, but in the most unappealing realm of raising money for these institutions to pay salaries. Who was this man?
Then I must ask, who was this man who raised in his own home an unusual family? First quantitatively, Kinainahara, 11 children. Who heard in those days of a family of that size and in the Bronx to boot? Family of 11 children, where he and his supremely devoted wife raised them to be more than B'nai Torah, Talmidei Chachamim and great Talmidei Chachamim. They were raised to be fine, normal children too. And frankly, I don't know how they turned out to be normal, because they were cut off from television, from the movies, from radio, from publications. They almost didn't socialize with anyone. They must have had themselves to socialize with. Whatever the case may have been, they grew up, and with his view that they are to be brought up al Taras HaKadosh, even in the Bronx. Who was this man? Again, I must ask, who was this man who had an unusual love for his Talmidim? As a matter of fact, the Talmidim who drew closely to him were treated as sons. His home was open to them. They could come Shabbos, Yom Tov, invited, uninvited. During the week, he could be called and he would respond to them with the feelings and emotions and the sensitivity of a father. I still remember how back in 1946, a hot summer, not as hot as this one, but a hot summer, when I was straying around, I don't know, playing checkers in the park, or listening to the ball game, or maybe even opening a gemara once in a while, and he noticed this, and he talked to me about it. He said, this is not good. So he told my parents, it's important that I go away to a yeshiva camp. And he made sure that I went away to a yeshiva camp and he paid for it. And what can I say? This is not one incident. Countless such incidents can be reported and have been recorded by many such Talmidim throughout the years. Who was this man? I hope it's not sounding like a litany, but all I can say is that at the point that I stop my questions, there are still some I've left out. Again, I must ask, who was this man who was a counselor to friends, to Talmidim, to Rosh Yeshivas, to strangers? He had the ability to give etzos based on his marvelous insight, and that ability was not repressed. He had it, and he gave it to all those who asked for it. At the Levaya this past Sunday,
Certainly Rav Rosenberg, who happens to, I think, be the principal of the Lakewood Cheder today, told me at the Levaya how he remembers just a couple of years ago, and he happened to have been one of the old Bronx boys, how he remembers just a couple of years ago, he had a problem that needed rather lengthy discussion. He called him up and said that he had to discuss it with him, and Rav Gerelk immediately responded. Rosenberg came in for that day, spent 3 hours with him, and he told me you could not tell that he was himself totally racked with all sorts of personal problems that he had been suffering from in later years. He gave of himself unthinkingly, such that all those who received his counsel knew that they were receiving his total involvement and concern. And it was done with great insight and great capacity. Who was this man? Again, I must ask, who was this man who could, in Torah ways and socially, relate to every strata in society? He could relate to Rosh Yeshivas, he could relate to 8-year-olds, he could relate to Talmidei Chachamim, he could relate to Balabatim, he could relate to strangers. In fact, I always marveled whenever I would come to a simcha, or chas v'chalila to some tragic event, he was always engaged in conversation with someone. He was never standing around just moping or looking for something to do with himself or twiddling his thumbs. He was always involved in conversation, discussing whatever the issues were with an interest and a fascination that for me was something that was truly unusual. And his ability to relate to everyone, and his thoughts relating to everyone, remind me of the time that my third son, Daniel, was bar mitzvah, and the bar mitzvah took place in his shul in the Bronx. And after the davening was over, we all went down to the kiddush. And I was walking with them. And as we were walking down to the kiddush, and pretty much everybody was rushing, everybody was hungry, took a long time, drushes and so forth, everybody was rushing. And then, as we were walking, Rav Gerelk noted, a 9-year-old boy maybe, standing there, taking a sitter, and davening Shmanes, davening Muslim. My reaction was, so what? So what? What does he, how does he react? He tells him, Yizek Dar Bochum, Yizek the Gevurah in Dar Bochum. You see his Gevurah? You see his Kvishas Hayetzer? Everybody's running down for food. Everybody's running for it. But he had forgotten that he hadn't davened Musaf yet. And he decided to daven Musaf. His perceptions related to children. Most of us, when we walk by children, don't even see them. He took note of it, because he had this capacity to relate to everyone. Who was it? Again, I must ask. Rav Gerelk, especially those who know the many stories, was an unusual Baal Chesed. In fact, when we were going to the Levaya, I was going to the Levaya with Rav Gronspiegel, who was also a very close Talmud of his some 10 years later, told me how he remembers how Rav Gerelk would approach a stranger on the street. In the Bronx in those days, you could still find a Jew. He would walk over to a stranger who looked forlorn, looked alone, looked neglected, strike up a conversation with him, ask him about himself,
and not stop there, and if he felt it appropriate, would then proceed to invite him to his home and have him over for Shabbosim. And sometimes this went on for years. Someone else at the Levaya told me, a son of a friend of his, that is a son of Grelick's friend, some years ago lost his brother. And the father called up Rav Grelick to tell him about the tragedy. Immediately, this was towards evening, immediately Rav Grelick, who lived in the, still lived in the Bronx, traveled all the way to Brooklyn, stayed with his friend all night, and stayed with him through the Levaya. Stayed with him for almost a period of 24 hours. The sense of chesed and feeling and outpouring of consideration for his friend and for strangers too was truly unusual. Who was he? Again, I must ask, who was this, and this is perhaps a little more familiar for some of you, who was this master of these witty and incisive insights, both in the realm of Divrei Kodesh and in the realm of Sichas Chulin? Though untrained in psychology, he was a master psychologist. His ability to perceive people and touch them up was almost scary. It was almost as if when you engaged Rav Grelick, you were going to, in a way, be analyzed, because he had that ability to do so, and he did it. And many of his Talmidim are very familiar with almost a tradition of quips that were not stam jokes, quips that said something about the nature of a yeshiva bacher, the nature of a yeshiva, the nature of whatever it is in society, those short quips. Who was he? And finally, I ask one final, who was he? Who was this man who had a fire burning within him for Torah? You might believe that a man like this had no time to learn. Certainly for most mortals, there would be no time left in view of his wide range of activities. In fact, he was a masvid. In his home, there was a separate room. In fact, it was the largest room in his home. That was a Beis HaMedrash, filled with sfarim, with shtenders, with tables for learning. And often I would note that he would be there late into the night, because he didn't sleep too much, learning. I knew that if I had conversation with him and I wasn't in the mood to learn, I felt very uncomfortable, because even if he enjoyed and engaged in Sichas Chulin conversation, there had to be some Divrei Torah going on. So that his learning was always going on, like a fire, because most of us engaged in these activities would have spent ourselves intellectually and simply just look back and yearn to the early years when we were in yeshiva. With him, his learning was a continuous process, not just because he had to stay a shia, but because that was his fiery mahus. Who was he? I think the announcement on the wall was, although initially inaccurate, as it turns out, most accurate. I think the announcement that was put up by Rav Grunstein was something to the effect that I am giving a shiur dedicated to the memory of Rav Gorela, something to that effect. The truth of the matter is, that's what I'm doing. But it's not a shiur in halacha that dedicated to his memory for his zchus, but it's a shiur dedicated to him, dedicated to his parshas achayim. When a eulogy is delivered, for most people, we can find myelis in everyone. This myra, this outstanding quality, but the diversity and the range of myros demands darshani. It needs a shia, it needs a lundus, it needs a yasai to define who this personality was, who could engage this wide panorama of Torah existence within his small frame. It will be inadequate to merely say he was an ish ha'ishkeles with many milos. That, of course, he was. But there is some underlying force that hopefully will give us an insight into who he was. Rav Gorelick, in his person, was a man who had spectacular breadth. In intellect, in emotion, in sensitivity, in energy level, I don't think I have ever met in all my life a man with his range and capacities. At the same time, he was possessed of an intense human passion that marked the passion of which he was possessed proceeded to fuse the breath of his personality and his being with the truth and purity of Torah. In his early adult years, he learned in Brisk, at the feet of the Brisk, the last Brisk Rav, the Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik, the son, of course, of Reb Chaim, of course, the uncle of the Rav. And whereas there were many others who had studied in Brisk, great Talmidei Chachamim today, great Rosh Yeshivas, but Rav Gorelick was unique in his relationship.
Because he not only learned the derech of Brit, the Torah of Brit, he learned the chayim of Brit, the lifestyle, the life pattern, the vision of Brit, and its entire Veltan challenge. He absorbed in his mahus. There were those who came by for a couple of years. He stayed there for many years, because he was going to absorb the purity of Torah, the incisiveness of Torah, the geshmak of Torah into himself. It was this inspiration in Brisk fused to his fiery personality that radiated
Because he not only learned the derech of Brit, the Torah of Brit, he learned the chayim of Brit, the lifestyle, the life pattern, the vision of Brit, and its entire Veltan challenge. He absorbed in his mahus. There were those who came by for a couple of years. He stayed there for many years, because he was going to absorb the purity of Torah, the incisiveness of Torah, the geshmak of Torah into himself. It was this inspiration in Brisk fused to his fiery personality that radiated the glow of Torah in all its manifest ways that I listed before. When his first machtenis there, you know the machtenis is the daughter-in-law's mother. When his first machtenis there, an English lady came to visit him in the Bronx, and she spent several days there. When she left, she said,
in the home of a Rav Gerelich, there is Torah B'Layim. You know, in today's world, there's Torah B'Derech Eretz, there's Torah in Magor, there's Torah in whatever else. With a Rav Gerelich, there was Torah B'Layim. There is no in. There is only Torah. So where does everything else come from? Where does all his range of activity come from? It all comes from Torah. The fire of Torah seared his entire personality, such that all his ways and all his conduct and all his endeavors were fired by that fuel. Whereas classical Brit was basically contained from within, they did not radiate out. If you came to Brit and you stayed with Brit and you insisted, then you learned about Brit. With Rav Gerelich, it was Brit in all its glory. Radiated out. Some might want to say, well, after all, Rav Gerelich could do so much and cover so many areas. Doesn't that subject him to the critique of being a jack of all trades without being a master of any? Not at all. Because, if I may say chat and jack of all trades, chat is that the person is spreading his capacities and his energy thin, resulting, of course, in nothing being done appropriately. His unquenchable fire of Torah just fueled life into whatever he did. Whether he was stupendous in any particular area or just extraordinary. But it was all there, it was all real, it was all me. That's the lumber that I'd like to communicate to you about Rav Gerelich. I'd like to add an addendum. And I mentioned that I was to a certain Rav, and he said, don't do it. I feel I have to do it. Because if I don't do it, the totality of his personality is not there, and there's a lack in the appreciation of him. Many of you may know, or you may have heard from your parents or friends, that Rav Gerelich had a very controversial relationship to the yeshiva world. He could be horridly critical of the goings-on at yeshiva. At the same time, he could be very admiring of Talmidim and other aspects of the yeshiva, especially of late. So, we have a stira. Yes or no? What's the final verdict? Some might say that it remained for him an unresolved intellectual issue. He couldn't resolve it. It was a taker. It was one of the issues that he cannot be able to answer and make the final determination. In reality, Rabbi Sai, the lumbus of his personality really explains this split. on one hand, his fiery passion for a vision of truth, as he learned it in Brit, could not allow him to tolerate the various goings on here that appeared to him to be compromising in the Amitakha Soteria. At the same time, his breadth and his scope for Torah and knowledge could not deny him the feeling that there's tremendous value and there's tremendous meaning to what is occurring here at Yeshiva. So it's out of the fierce struggle going within who he was that that kind of a mixed experience existed within him all these years. In fact, I want to make another addendum. His passion for truth was so intense, and I'm being very careful, of course, I'm almost reading, that I and others like me often thought of his divrei teichacha to us as being insulting of us. In reality, it was a burning vision of truth that he was trying to communicate to us, never willing to give up, that someday we would be able to see that truth. The Mishnah in the end of Sefer says as follows: Mishemeis Rabbi Meir Batlu Moshe Misholim, Mishemeis Ben Azai Batlu Ashakdani, Mishemeis Ben Zema Batlu Adarshani, Mishemeis Rabbi Akiva Batlu Kveir Atara, Mishemeis Rabbi Kanira Ben Dosa Batlu Anshe Maisa. Mishemeis Rav Yosef Katanta Poskul Chasidim. Mishemeis Rav Yochanan Ben Zakkai Botel Ziva Kochma. Mishemeis Rav Gamliel Azokim Botel Kveda Torah. And there are one or two others. What's the Mishnah telling us? It's telling us they were great people. So what? Okay, fine. So what? The Mishnah is not into history. This Mishnah is part of the
Thank you.